Bienvenidos. Hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste. Konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tak, jawi viva kat bang, half a day, jai chanendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan. Peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical kill, vivisection prison, killitary industrial core poor nation. In the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the USA. Home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Oh, am I prepared for the show today? I'm running around. I have to do laundry. I'm getting it together. I have to go down to Los Angeles this week and meet with the Marriott and go over logistics for the upcoming World Vegan Summit and Expo. I mean, there's just so much, so many details. And you can go to worldvegansummit.com and, you know, working on the Saturday night dinner show, which is going to be amazing. Well, we have two amazing speakers, Dr. Milton Mills and Dr. Antenna Roba for that. And I see that Babette Davis, who is the owner of Stuff I Eat Restaurant, will be at Soul Food for Thought. She'll be speaking. She's nearby with a great restaurant in an African-American neighborhood. She's in Inglewood. That'll be great. Vegan Boss will be performing. Blaze Mob, a reggae band. Vegan members from Kingston, Jamaica, just getting it together with them this week, so they'll be there. I mean, there's just so much going on. It's unbelievable. WorldVeganSummit.com. You can register right now. Heading out. This has been an interesting week. You know, I mean, very kind of upsetting in so many areas where we look at foie gras ban overturned, people raising their glasses, doing champagne toasts to Proposition 2. I know that Professor Gary Francione wants to talk about that later in the program. He may be on a little early this week. Also on today's program, coming up, the legendary health and medical professional, Dr. Michael Clapper, and he is one of the speakers at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Reason to register right now? I mean, right there, Dr. Michael Clapper. And you know, we're getting together at this event because we don't want to promote what these other, you know, imposter organizations are doing right now with Proposition 2 and so-called humane meat, and it's really the insanity. We're getting together to focus on promotion of veganism. So when we do have the World Vegan Summit and Expo, Dr. Clapper will be talking about the best health arguments that we can use to encourage others to go vegan. That's what he'll talk about at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You're not going to want to miss that. So register. Well, don't register now. Wait till the program's over. 2 hours. We're live every Sunday, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. And hard to believe that we started in January of 2001. So we are now commemorating 14 years on the air with Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Uncompromising, we are not for, you know, all of this nonsense, the humane meat, the cage-free, the grass-fed, the diarrhea-fed. If you eat pork or ham or bacon, you know, all the pigs who survive right now are surviving because they're fed diarrhea to build their immunity to a horrible plague, you know, lethal plague that's spreading, that's killing pigs. So enjoy your diarrhea-fed bacon. Very upset, as is Professor Francione, with, I can think of no greater obscenity than a champagne toast with Wayne Pacelli, no less, to Proposition 2. I would like to describe such behavior, you know, with a constant barrage of F-bombs right now, but well, that might be considered obscene, you know. But, I've been in broadcasting so many years, I know what words not to say, you know. But you know, to reach that, the emotional level, the impact of the obscenity that I feel like I'm describing when does a champagne toast to Proposition 2. I don't know, maybe if you just imagine every other word, just insert the F word in your mind as I discuss this obscenity here. It's just so such a perversion. Since, you know, every animal facility is really a concentration camp, nothing has changed for chickens. Except our delusion, or I guess we have to get drunk. We have to drink that champagne. Probably not vegan champagne being drunk either. I know San Francisco SPCA had Pacelli out there. Animal Place was out there. That's hard to believe. Bringing chickens, giving the wrong impression of what Prop 2 is doing for chickens. I don't know. Still, every animal facility is a concentration camp, and since the eating of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs is an unnecessary mass massacre of the innocent, you know, by the millions every day, just about every hour, I think the Nazi metaphor applies. I see a champagne toast to Prop 2, similar to, let's say people who were concerned about Jews in concentration camps, toasting that, you know, today would be the day that lavender air freshener is to start being sprayed in the gas chambers. You know, that would make it better, huh? Only nobody remembered to order the air freshener, plus the Nazi front office also decided, hey, you know, the air freshener is too expensive. We'll never order it. So, exit out of the budget. Except we have some cheap, non-vegan champagne over here. So let's toast, what will we call it? Let's toast the liberation of the Jews. Yeah, that's what the Nazi front office, the PR, office would probably say would be a good toast, you know, on the day when lavender started never arriving, similar to the day Prop 2, whatever it was supposed to do. Nobody even knows what it's supposed to do. I mean, half of the animal rights activists thought it was supposed to be, chickens were supposed to be cage-free. That was never said. You know, people were just arguing, the birds, they can just spread, we'll give them room, they can spread their wings, that's all. Can't they just have the room to spread their wings? Well, as it turns out, you know, they'd have to take turns in their battery cages. Only one bird could really spread her wings at one time. this is so crazy. But the commandant says, lift your glasses, you know. The Nazi propaganda reads. By the way, if I want to read this Nazi propaganda like it reads in the San Francisco Gate, but if you are offended by the Nazi analogy, if you don't like that, I'll remind you that Isaac Bashevis Singer, the Polish-born Jewish-American writer who wrote only in Yiddish was the son of a rabbi and rabbi's daughter, and he fled the Holocaust, and he was a Nobel Prize winner. Well, he wrote in The Letter Writer, quote, "In relation to animals, all people are Nazis. For the animals, it is an eternal Treblinka," end quote. Well, he is saying for the animals, it's an eternal concentration camp, eternal suffering, eternal torture, an eternal death camp. By the way, Eternal Treblinka is the title of an excellent book by Charles Patterson, again, relevant to the subject of the relationship of humans to animals, as all people are Nazis to the animals, as Isaac Bashevis Singer also wrote. How can we speak of right and justice if we take an innocent creature and shed his blood. Singer was a prominent figure way back then in what was called the vegetarian movement. I don't know if he was a vegan calling himself vegetarian. As in the past, many thought of them as, you know, the words vegetarian and vegan. Vegan didn't really come around till 1944, but one could have been a vegan without the word vegan prior to that. Many thought such action would be synonymous. Before the dairy and egg industries saw, you know, that they could get in on the action and cash in on it, they, you know, hey, just call yourself a lacto-vegetarian, or call yourself, you know, you can still be cool, still be a vegetarian, just, you know, call yourself lacto, or ovo, you know, eat eggs, go ahead, you can still be cool. But if Singer, and I'm not talking about Peter Singer, I'm talking about Isaac Bashevis Singer, were truly Orthodox, an Orthodox Jew, and adhered to the biblical diet in Genesis book 129, where it says to the effect, behold, I have given you every herb, every plant on the face of the earth, every tree with seed in its fruit. This will be your food, period, end of sentence, end of first commandment. Right there in the beginning of the Bible, people seem to skip that. All religious people, everybody. Huh? When asked if he adopted his diet for health reasons, he replied, yes, for the health of the chickens. So, of course, he would not be eating eggs if he were concerned about chickens. He would not celebrate the concentration camp conditions allowed by Proposition 2 and other chicken and egg legislation supported by, you know, the lavender air freshener activists of the so-called animal rights movement, you know, like HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, Mercy for Animals, Farm Sanctuary, Compassion Over Killing, Farm, now Animal House, hard to believe, a champagne toast to concentration camps, a champagne toast to mutilation, de-beaking. Oh, I didn't even get started here, okay. Well, we will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. Please register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Go to WorldVeganSummit.com. With Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden on Facebook. There are also two Bob Linden pages on Facebook, just to keep you doing, or at least have me doing everything in triplicate, it seems, all the time. A lot of posting this week, too. I hate it when I get in a position to say I told you so. But there we have the foie gras ban overturned now. So more wasted time and energy and money on what we thought was a victory years ago, until we find out that legislation is not the answer, because, well, law enforcement doesn't enforce foie gras bans, and law enforcement has already said it will not enforce Prop 2 once anybody figures out what Prop 2 is supposed to mean, which nobody really knows. And, you know, with the foie gras ban, when we're out there, you know, against foie gras, aren't we saying all the other cruel so-called animal products on the menu are okay? I think the only serious campaign against foie gras is a campaign to get everybody to go vegan, because, you know, I mean, do you think all the chickens, all the male chicks who are ground alive or suffocated right at birth are thinking, wow, you know, foie gras? And that's what's strange, because, you know, that was the line from the Humane Society of the United States. Dr. Michael Greger said it. Paul Shapiro said it. It's like, what? You don't think that cage-free chicken liver pate is better than foie gras? not to the chickens, to both of them. They would both prefer, the chickens and the ducks, all would prefer that we go vegan and eliminate consumer demand for their bodies and their excretions. I'm not going to get to anything in this show, I could see. Clock is just going by, looking at the San Francisco gate. Just get upset with the headline. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Michael Clapper coming up in a few minutes. Professor Gary Francione also wants to talk about the dogs brought to the U.S. from Korea by HSUS. And I think he's upset with the champagne toast to Prop 2 also. The headline, chickens stretch their legs as Prop 2 finally takes effect. As if something happened on January 1st. Chickens still only get 67 square inches of space. And then you get this picture of somebody holding a hen. It says Kim Kunst with Animal Place holds a surrendered rooster at the San Francisco, California SPCA January 10th. Animal rights activists celebrate the new California laws passed to protect egg-laying chickens from inhumane conditions. Well, if anything could be more misleading than just that one line, but hey, chickens are now protected from inhumane conditions. You know, nothing happened. But hey, we could all eat chicken, even vegans, right? They're all protected from inhumane conditions. And then the article starts off, free at last. Free at last? Really? All of the chickens still in battery cages? Free at last. Hens and one rooster crossed the bay to San Francisco Saturday to celebrate enactment of Proposition 2, a law passed in 2008 that gave California egg farmers 6 years' notice before they'd have to give chickens room to spread their wings and stretch their legs. Well, Wayne Pacelli, Commandant Pacelli, was going around the state telling us that California would be a cage-free state. Not that cage-free is any better for the birds. They're in cages, you know, with, you know, body to body, you know, might as well be in battery cages. It's the same thing, only it's a cage with, you know, tens of thousands of birds. But okay, so he was saying it'd be a cage-free state. Paul Shapiro was saying they'd be in cages, but the cages would be bigger. Nobody really knows. And then along came the rotten egg bill, which then gave approval to what animal rights groups used to oppose, so-called enriched cages, enriched battery cages, where they shove in a stick that gets covered with poop and, you know, some other things that, you know, are some, again, supposed to make us feel better about the concentration camp conditions. It's really, and that's it. I only get to line one of this article. Okay, well, we'll see what we can get to. We'll continue. Dr. Michael Clapper coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Twitter at GoVeganRadio.com. Register now at WorldVeganSummit.com. Dr. Clapper is speaking there. GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Facebook, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden, and the two Bob Linden pages there. Try to follow me if you can. Be my friend. My old friend, Dr. Michael Clapper, is on today's program. The legendary health and medical professional, practicing physician with over 40 years' experience in general practice and acute care medicine. And he's received numerous awards as a clinical teacher. He's been a nutrition advisor for NASA. and is no stranger to the microphone. For 10 years, he hosted the popular radio show Sounds of Healing on Pacifica Radio, WPFW, in Washington, D.C. And this past year, in May, he released the DVD Sense and Nonsense in Nutrition. And his website is drclapper.com. Spell out Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R. Could do that, Dr. K-L-A-P-E-R.com. And he will be one of the wonderful speakers at the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming up March 20, 21, and 22 at the Marriott in Marina Del Rey. You can register right now at worldvegansummit.com because you will want to hear Dr. Clapper there talking about the best health arguments we can use to encourage others to go vegan. So that'll be his topic then. But he's with us here now. And how are you, Dr. Clapper?
I'm doing just fine, Bob. Good to hear your voice and your unusual enthusiastic approach to all matters vegan. It's good to talk to you.
Well, thank you. I have no choice. I am enthusiastic about it. And who would have imagined, never would have imagined, you know, growing up all my life eating, you know, meat, dairy, fish, and eggs, never imagined I'd host a vegan radio show. But it's all a surprise to me. And you probably getting into the medical profession didn't realize where you'd be going too, right? I mean,
absolutely. I was trained as a classically trained Western physician, and for the first 10 years of my medical practice, I was doing blood and guts emergency room medicine. I thought that's what I'd be doing all my life. And to be spending my time now trying to keep people out of hospitals and off of operating tables and taking great pleasure in stopping their medications instead of starting them, that's quite the opposite place I thought I would be. But life is like that, isn't it?
Right. And so what was your awakening moment as a regular medical doctor working along? What opened your eyes and said, whoa, I have to do something different?
Oh, it was a convergence of a number of factors in the early 80s. I was studying to be an anesthesiologist. I was doing my residency in anesthesiology. I was in the cardiovascular anesthesia surgical suite. And day after day, I'm putting people to sleep and watching surgeons open up their chest and out of their arteries pulling this yellow, greasy guck called atherosclerosis that was at the base of these terrible plaques that was clotting off the blood flow to their hearts and their brains. And after a particularly greasy glob was extracted from someone's arteries, I thought to myself, gee, that stuff looks like chicken fat. And a little voice on my shoulder said, there's a good reason why it looks like chicken fat, doctor. It is chicken fat and cow fat and pig fat and the fat of all the other slow animals this person was eating when they walked past his table and he had a fork in his hand. And I realized my dad died of clogged arteries. I was going to lay on that table myself if I didn't change my diet, because I was eating the standard diet. And the idea of eating animal flesh, and I saw what it does to people's arteries after they eat a fatty meal. Their blood runs thick with fat for about 4 or 5 hours so their liver can begin to clear it out of there. The connection, especially after Dr. Dean Ornish's work showing that plant-based diets can reverse atherosclerosis, all these factors made it very clear to me that it was time to stop eating animals. And so I did, and a 30-pound spare tire of fat melted off my belly. My cholesterol dropped from 240 to 140. My blood pressure had been elevated at 140-90 and went, dropped down to 110-70. And it felt great waking up in a nice, lean, light body every day. And I just felt great. And I knew that at that point there was no going back. And in fact, I left anesthesia and went back to general practice to start to help people to keep them off that operating table. And I certainly don't regret any of the moves, either adopting a plant-based diet or leaving anesthesia where I was spending my days putting people to sleep, to going back to nutritional medicine and educational medicine where we're trying to help wake people up. And it's a much more satisfying kind of medicine for me, with all due respects to my colleagues in anesthesia and surgery.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, my father died suddenly at age 47 of a heart attack. All of his brothers and sisters had heart problems, and I thought, well, it's in the genes, but I guess it was on our plates. We were all eating the same awful, you know, unhealthy so-called foods, you know. So, well, there, you just made one of the best arguments we can use to encourage others to go vegan. But that's your talk at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. But what has been interesting you lately in the areas of nutrition and health?
Right. Well, two studies went by in the last 12 months or so that really caught my eye, and they have the potential to really start turning the tide as far as getting people to see the importance of adopting plant-based diets, or at least moving away from animal-based diets. Now, one was a study out of Cleveland Clinic back in May of 2013, where they looked at the intestinal bacteria of people who eat animal flesh versus those that eat plants, plant-based diets. And indeed, the food you put down your intestines, down your intestinal tract, determines the bacteria that live down there. And the folks who eat on a flesh-based diet, you drop a piece of chicken muscle or cow muscle or pig muscle down your gullet 2-3 times a day, as most Americans do, you'll summon up a population of bacteria that eat carnitine and various animal-based constituents. And these are not friendly bacteria. These are Peptostreptococci and Clostridia. And these are not friendly guys because they can't help themselves. But when that next piece of chicken muscle or cow muscle comes down, the bacteria metabolize the carnitine in that animal flesh into a nasty molecule called trimethylamine. Your listener may say, so what? Well, your liver takes this trimethylamine and oxidizes it into the stuff called trimethylamine oxide, TMAO. And this is a molecule from hell. This stuff drives cholesterol into the artery walls and seems to be, it's the anti-good cholesterol, the anti-HDL. And it would seem to really promote atherosclerotic plaque formation. And I'm afraid our friends who ascribe to the paleo philosophy, who are dropping these bolts of meat down their gullet every 4 or 5 hours, are summoning up these population bacteria that are going to set themselves up for an epidemic of heart attacks and strokes. They may feel leaner and healthier, but what's really happening inside their arteries, I'm afraid, might be quite frightening. So that's been a concern of mine, and that's a story that certainly needs to be told, or at least, you know, followed as time goes along. It's very interesting. They took vegans and gave them a piece of steak, and this trimethylamine oxide did not show up in their blood because they don't have the bacteria down there to do that production of the TMA, which turns into the TMAO. So your diet really does make a huge difference, and plant-based diets, folks seem to have a big advantage when it comes to their gut bacteria.
What vegan would allow that kind of experiment, though?
That's... Indeed. That was they get a gold star above and beyond the call of duty there. But
giving one's life away to science.
It's a very profound thing they demonstrated, no?
Wow, amazing. So, yeah. Anything else that you've seen lately that's
well, I'm sure. The other one was a study that showed up in Pediatrics International Journal in 2010, but it's starting to get the airplay it deserves. This is a study out of Japan by Dr. Maruyama and his colleagues, and it has to do with the estrogens that are in cow's milk. People think that cows are happily in the dairy barn giving milk, and that's what they do. No, cows are mammals, and the only reason they give milk is they just had a baby. And they're made pregnant, and they give birth to their baby. The baby's taken away, and the milk is sucked off of them. And like all mother's milk, cow's milk is full of estrogens. All mother's milk is full of estrogens, and dairy milk was normally no exception. But thanks to modern dairying techniques, normally when a cow is pregnant, when mammals are pregnant, when a woman is pregnant, she stops lactating. She dries up, so to speak, and gets ready for the baby she's carrying so she can nurse that baby with a decent milk supply. But that, of course, for modern dairy production is not a good thing. It takes this milk-producing cow out of production. So the dairy producers, their dairy industry, went to the folks in the agricultural genetics industry and said, can you help us with this? And the GMO, the genetically modifying scientists, said, no problem. And they genetically modified the cows. So now modern dairy cows will continue to lactate. They'll continue to give milk, even though they are pregnant with their next calf. So the majority of modern milk production now is being sucked off of large pregnant bovines. You know, they are pregnant. Well, what do you think the estrogen content of that milk is going to be? I mean, ask any woman who's ever had a baby. She's walking around with high estrogen levels for 9 months. Their tissues get saturated with it. Well, you could imagine the milk from a pregnant bovine. It is brimming with estrogens. And these researchers said, what does this do in the bodies of human beings? And, well, they found out. Seven men, six prepubertal children, and five women gave them two big glasses of milk, and then collected their urine every 15 minutes and look for powerful female hormones, estrogens. Well, it didn't take long. The estrogen level in their urines was suddenly brimming with estrone and estradiol and estriol and pregnenolone. These are potent, active mammalian estrogens, and it certainly showed up in the urine of all the adults and all the children. And when they drew blood on the little boys and the men, their testosterone levels were significantly decreased because they just had this big bolt of estrogen. And this is highly significant because
hold that thought on why it's significant, because we have to take a break. We're talking to Dr. Michael Klepper. Dr. Klepper will be speaking at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can register now at worldvegansummit.com. His website is drklapper.com, DocTorKla. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, a couple of Bob Linden pages on Facebook also, and we are nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, live Sundays 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com, where the programs are archived. And today we are talking to the world-renowned health, medical, and nutritional professional, Michael Klepper, MD, who will be speaking at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. His topic will be the best health arguments we can use to encourage others to go vegan. Before the break, Dr. Klepper, you were talking to us about cow's milk drinkers and high estrogen levels in their urine and low testosterone in the men. Did I almost summarize what where we are, or do you want to?
Yes, you did a good job of it. Absolutely. Just for our listeners may be joining us, the milk of a cow, since it's the animal, the milk of an animal that's just given birth, normally cow's milk is full of estrogen, like all mother's milk is, but the cows have been genetically modified now to give milk even though they're pregnant with their next calf. So the milk of a pregnant bovine is just brimming with estrogens, as this study showed. They gave two big glasses of milk to seven men, six prepubertal children, five women, and checked their urine every 15 minutes. And within 15 minutes, their urine was pouring with estrone, estradiol, estriol, pregnenolone. And when they drew blood on the boys and the men, their testosterone levels plummeted because they just had big bolts of estrogen. And this has great significance, as the authors are pointing out. When you think of this river of dairy products, all the milk and cheese and ice cream and yogurt that is pouring down the throats of certainly our children, these authors pointed out, adults as well, of course, but these authors pointed out to the worrisome fact that these are potent mammalian estrogens that clearly are hormonally active, as we see as they suppress the testosterone levels. They're concerned, how about all our young girls who are going through puberty now at age 7 and 8 and 9, and it's becoming very obvious to parents and doctors alike, and why is this happening, this epidemic of precocious puberty? Maybe it's the pesticides, maybe it's the plastic plasticizers, maybe, but how can we possibly overlook this flood of active mammalian estrogens? And this is estradiol, estrone. These are potent active estrogens that are saturating the bodies of our children day after day. You drink your milk, eat your cheese, here's an ice cream for treat. And could this not be a major driving factor in all this precocious puberty, which not only carries the very bothersome issue of a young girl child confronting her sexuality at age 8, but also when you follow these girls along to their womanhood, this puts them at higher risk for breast cancer, this early exposure to estrogens. And the authors bring this into focus, and I have to with not a little bit of irony point out all the anti-soy tsunami from a few years ago. Don't eat soy products, it's got phytoestrogens, might turn your son gay, and the truth is that the phytoestrogens in soy are minimally biologically active, and what biological activity they have seems to be protective. The women who consume the soy have a lower risk of breast cancer, but meanwhile the folks who promote that viewing conveniently have us overlook this very large source of very powerful active estrogen in the American diet, and it's having an effect. These guys sitting on their couch eating their cheese nachos, and they look down and why am I growing these man boobs? Well, the female breast is not the only hormone responsive organ in the body. The male breast tissue responds as well, and there's concern that maybe all the extra deep dish pizzas and cheese nachos the guys are eating are driving the man boobs they're growing. And get your breasts, get your mammograms, ladies, those breast lumps may be malignant. Why are American women getting all these breast lumps? Could it be that torrent of milk and cheese and ice cream and yogurt full of bovine estrogens pouring through their breast tissue day after day? Maybe, that's might be promoting the uterus.
We need to take a break.
Responds to estrogen and all these fibroids that women sprout out that make them have heavy periods and then need hysterectomies.
Dr. Clapper, we need to take another break. We will continue with Dr. Michael Clapper, Professor Francione, next hour too on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. To the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. We are live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. We are commemorating our 14th anniversary on the air. I thought this show would last 2 or 3 weeks when we started in January of 2001. But I guess the owners of the radio stations and the network and all haven't heard the show yet, so they don't know what they're putting on, right? And GCN said this is its first food show, and I was surprised that this is a food show. But okay, I'm there. I'm with them. We're talking about food, like Vegetarian House, a 100% vegan restaurant in San Jose, 520 East Santa Clara Street. One of the best restaurants in the world. Just check out the menu. Go to vegetarianhouse.us. And if you have an event coming up in the Bay Area, a business event or social event, you're getting married, you really want to make it special, Vegetarian House caters and makes it a very special event. Thanks to Vegetarian House for support for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Vegetarian House, 100% vegan, non-GMO, organic, delicious. You'll love it. And we're talking to Michael Clapper, MD, one of the illustrious speakers at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can register now at worldvegansummit.com. At the event, he'll be talking about the best health arguments we can use to encourage others to go vegan. And today we've been talking a bit, you've been talking about what has been interesting, you coming along lately in medical studies, and apparently today's genetically modified cow is producing milk that's awash in estrogens, and the whole country, everybody's awash in dairy. And you said, Dr. Clapper, that girls are reaching puberty at age 7 and 8 and at risk for breast cancer with the increased estrogens, and boys are developing man boobs and lower testosterone levels. And I presume cancer risks for the males, too, along with that? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, well, it's been known for quite a while that men who consume dairy products are at higher risk for prostate cancer, and when they do get a prostate cancer, if they're consuming dairy products that have not only estrogens, but remember, the milk of a cow is designed to turn a 65-pound calf into a 700-pound cow as rapidly as possible. It is filled, I mean, it is baby calf growth fluid. That's what the stuff is. And everything in that liquid, the hormones, the lipids, the sodium, the estrogens, and the very powerful growth factors, insulin-like growth factor 1, IGF-1, is the most powerful growth-promoting hormone in the body, and cow's milk is filled with it. And men who, when they do sprout out a prostate cancer, if they're consuming dairy products with all these growth-promoting factors in it, it seems that the prostate cancer they do get is of a more aggressive type. And similar, when women who consume dairy products get a breast cancer, it's in a more aggressive form of the breast cancer. And again, they're consuming growth, baby calf growth fluid filled with growth promoting factors. It's not hard to see the link why this might be true. So, just to sum up, we're seeing this this wave of estrogenic effects and sweep through our society, with from precocious puberty in the little girls to breast lumps and breast cancers and man boobs and fibroids. And they're looking, button, who's got the button, what could the cause be? And again, it might be right under our noses, in that glass of milk, that hunk of cheese, that dish of Greek yogurt, that ice cream treat that we consume. It's filled with baby calf growth fluid. It's filled with estrogens. How can we turn a blind eye to this? And so I'm waiting for this very large penny to drop and for some pediatric endocrinologist to have the courage to stand up and say, how can we be overlooking this? Because I just saw a book coming out about puberty in girls, and they say, we just don't know the cause, but not a word was mentioned about the dairy-borne estrogens that were pouring down the throats of our little girls. So
everybody likes to ignore the cause.
Soy phytoestrogens, we want to look at the active dairy estrogens. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm saying everybody likes to overlook the cause of everything that's wrong with the world. Like the environmental movement overlooks that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change and environmental devastation. It's like people seem to want to, just look the other way because it's, hey, got to have my meat, my dairy, my fish, my eggs. But also, you did mention, I'd just like you to address for a quick moment, we don't hear about this, but we did hear that, look out for soy and estrogen. So again, just correct the story on that one for a second.
Yes, back in the late 90s, the Weston Price Foundation and other folks associated with the meat industry launched this anti-soy tsunami that says, there's molecules in soy products that have a vague chemical resemblance to estrogens, and therefore they might be causing estrogenic effects. And look out, it'll turn your little son gay. Don't give him estrogens, and don't give him soy products, and don't be eating them yourselves. Well, and so it swept through the popular press, and soy still wears this burden of being labeled as a possible cancer causer or feminizing food. When the truth is the phytoestrogen, phyto means plant. They have very little resemblance to mammalian estrogens. They are very weak biological activity, if any at all. And it apparently seems to be protective. The phytoestrogens, the plant estrogen molecules, seem to block the estrogen receptors, so it keeps the cancer-causing effects of actual mammalian estrogen from being expressed. breast. So the women who consume soy products actually have a lower incidence of breast cancer when you actually follow them out and stop just waving this threatening association. Uh-oh, it might increase the risk of breast cancer. When you actually look at the women, it turns out the soy is protective of breast cancer. But there's no question these mammalian bovine estrogens, these are official. This is estriol. This is estrone. This is progesterone. This is pregnenolone. This is estriol. These are actual mammalian estrogens. There's no question they are active. And indeed, these researchers showed the plummeting levels of testosterone, of other hormones, FSH and luteinizing hormones, all dropped when the little boys and men consumed the dairy products with the cow estrogens in it. And but you know, it's an ultimate inconvenient truth. You know, oh, don't want to look there because look at all the funding that we're getting and my university gets from the dairy folks. You know, you don't want to do this research that may shine an adverse light upon dairy products. But gee, you know, when you consider how many billions we spend on mammograms and breast biopsies and mastectomies and all of this and prostate cancer, which seems to be driven or made worse by estrogens. Gee, we've got to look at this fire raging right under our noses here in this hormonal fire, if you will, in these bovine estrogens that we eat in such prodigious amounts.
It's everywhere. There's no dairy is in everything. I know. You just go up and down the supermarket aisles. It's just everywhere.
It's hidden in plain sight, but we've got to have a real look at this. But again, it's one of the great undiscussed stories. But hopefully,
except here on a vegan radio show, so that's why we have an audience. They hear stuff here. They go, "What? This is so different." So listen to that extreme doctor right now.
Right? Yeah, really. Well, the study is in the it's already in the medical journals. If you go to Pediatrics International 2010, look up by Dr. Moriyama, Maruyama, you'll find the estrogen study in the cow's milk. And if you go to Natural Medicine, May 2013, you'll find, and just to put in carnitine there, you'll see the study showing that the flesh eaters have carnitine oxidizing bacteria that produce this atherogenic molecule.
The soy should be organic because we don't really want to have the GMO soy. So, soy is positive, but right?
I'm sorry. Go to the organic. If you don't want to have GMO soy, absolutely yes. If there's any value still to the organic label, it's not supposed to be GMO. So absolutely, the non-GMO soy should be perfectly safe. Absolutely.
Okay. Dr. Clapper, you're having a week-long retreat coming up in May, a couple of months after you speak at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. But yes, tell us about it.
Right. We're going to be out in the beautiful Red Rock country of Arizona from May 16th through the 22nd. I've been a healer for the past 40 years, and I have a lot of information and knowledge that I'd like to share with people about bringing out the healer inside of them, because heaven knows this world could certainly use more healers. And so we're going to be sharing secrets of healers throughout the ages, the best of Western medicine healing, how to deal with fractures and serious medical healings that need to be done, but also healing your own mind, your own heart, clearing your head out from confusing thoughts, lets you be a clear, centered being that can bring healing energy to any situation. You'll leave with an empowered healer within you after spending a week with us. Now, if people want to find out information, go to my website, as you mentioned so kindly, www.drclaper.com, only one P in Clapper. .com and click on events and you'll see our Sedona Healing Treat Journey to the Heart of Healing, and invite all your listeners to come with us. It should be a beautiful, empowering week, and you'll leave there a more empowered healer.
Great. So that's in May, coming up in May. And in March 2021 and 22, we're looking forward to seeing you at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. I know you're excited about that too.
I really am. I really have to commend you, Bob. This is a really important gathering, and I'm very impressed with the lineup of other speakers. I'm coming in a day early just so I can hear Philip Wolin speak, but there's so many of my heroes in the movement that are going to be appearing there. I'm looking forward to coming and meeting these people and learning a heck of a lot. So it looks like a fabulous conference. I really commend you for putting it on. Well done, sir.
Well, you know, that's my cause, you know, the vegan cause. That's it. I can't think of anything more important for, you know, for every reason, you know, for the animals, for health, for the environment. That's it. So we're going to gather there and focus and get it together, and your contribution will be the best health arguments we can use to encourage others to go vegan. Dr. Michael Clapper, I want to thank you for being with us today on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Once again, the website, drclapper.com, drclapper.com. Thanks, Dr. Clapper.
Thank you, Bob. All the best to you. See you at your conference in March. All the best.
See you there. You can register now at worldvegansummit.com. Professor Gary Francione, who will be there too, coming up next on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden on Facebook, two Bob Linden pages on Facebook, and it is time now, actually, we're trying to get on a few minutes earlier with Professor Gary Francione, the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. He is a main speaker at the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming up March 2021 and 22. If ever a week, you know, kind of symbolized the need for what we're doing at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, I think, you know, this week with everything from, well, the champagne toast to Proposition 2, the foie gras ban being overturned, Professor Francione has a strong opinion about HSUS and the dogs of Korea. How are you today, Professor Francione?
Strong opinion? You think I have strong
really? No, you've never had a bland opinion, really, come to think of it. So,
yes. It's not worth having an opinion if it's not strong.
If it's not strong.
It's not strong. Why have it?
I've been venting. You know, I started venting at the top of the show. There were so many things I wanted to get to, including a San Francisco Gate article, SF Gate, you know, that I couldn't even get past the first picture in the article that said, Kim Kunst with Animal Place holds a surrendered rooster at the San Francisco, California SPCA on Saturday, as animal rights activists celebrate the new California laws passed to prevent egg-laying hens, egg-laying chickens from inhumane conditions. So all the conditions have been solved just from the caption under the picture. So, and then it starts off saying that free at last, 20 hens and one rooster crossed the bay to San Francisco Saturday to celebrate enactment of Proposition 2. I didn't even get past the first lines before, you know, this is all, what is this all? Talk to me, Professor Francione.
What's really upsetting about it, look, you know, I was thinking about this today. What these organizations are trying to do is to create. They're trying to create this idea that, well, we can actually regulate animal use and improve humane conditions. And they're trying to create these markets of supposedly higher welfare products. But the problem is that this involves these organizations in basically promoting this stuff. So whether they want to or not, I don't think some of them probably like it less than others, but they're all of these organizations, from PETA, you know, to Mercy for Animals, to Compassion Over Killing, to HSUS, to all of them, they're all promoting this happy exploitation, because you cannot have campaigns like this in which you're saying, well, you know, we ought to do this for the, you know, for the chickens, we ought to do this for the pigs, we ought to do this for, the, you know, this animal and that animal. You can't have those campaigns without maintaining that the higher welfare conditions are morally good things. So you've got to present them as positive things. And what you end up doing is encouraging the continued consumption of animal products, because what you're saying, you know, you're the expert, you're the animal group, and what you're saying to the public is this is now being done a whole lot better. So, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
They know nothing is happening. They know there's confusion. They know there's no response from the industry. Nothing has been done. Law enforcement says it won't enforce whatever it is. They don't even know what it is, you know? So it's so deceptive because they're promoting, fully knowing that nothing's happening, they're toasting, you know, they're having champagne toasts, knowing that nothing's happening.
Yeah, I mean, look, whether something happens or not, Bob, it's really sort of irrelevant, because what's going to happen is either enriched cages or cage-free situations, and both of those circumstances, you know, cage-free and enriched cages, both involve torturing those hens. So whether it's a conventional cage or an enriched cage, or whether it's one huge cage called the cage-free barn, in many ways, Bob, it doesn't really matter. Even if something happens, nothing happens. That's the problem.
True.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't be in favor of animal exploitation, no matter how humane the conditions were, because I think it's fundamentally there's an issue of justice here. We cannot justify continuing to exploit non-human animals, and it's not a question of how humanely we do it. We can't justify doing it, no matter how humane it is. But the reality is that even if something happens in California, what happens, Bob?
It'll be overturned or not enforced.
Even if it's not overturned, even if it's upheld and implemented uniformly across the state of California, what do you have? You have enriched cages. You have cage free.
Right.
You know
both
what?
Horrendous. Both awful.
Both horrendous.
Time for the break. We'll be right back with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, goveganradio with Bob Linden on Facebook, a couple of Bob Linden pages on Facebook to confuse you also, and we're of course being confused by all of these so-called animal advocacy groups. The SF Gate article says, oh, Prop 2 was the first time voters anywhere were asked to eliminate the practice of confining chickens in tiny cages. They shouldn't ask the voters to do that. It's the egg industry who would do it. But then they'd only let them into a cage-free environment, which is terrible too. So there's no really good alternative. Nothing's happening, but there's no good alternative. But in the SF Gate, it says, it was a serious fight, said Jennifer Fearing, who headed up the campaign. It feels damn good, said Fearing, who has parlayed the Prop 2 victory into her own lobbying firm, Fearless Advocacy. So can anybody say opportunist? But you're right, Professor Francione, cage-free and enriched, there's no good solution, even if they do something. It's horrible for the chickens.
Right now in California, the issue is whether or not Prop 2 requires cage-free, or whether or not it's satisfied simply by the enriched cage. My view is it doesn't really matter, because the hens are going to be tortured either way. And my guess is it'll probably be held to be satisfied by the enriched cage,
yes,
which is the lesser of the two welfare reforms. But you know what? It's just, the difference between cage-free and enriched cage is, you know, you've got a larger cage. I mean, cage-free is horrible. And enriched cages are horrible.
But they use the language. Oh, cage-free sounds good, even though it's horrible. Enriched sounds good, but it's horrible.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Cage-free sounds good. It ain't. But, you know, look, this has been a very weird week. I saw that HSUS had brought 23 dogs from Korea. Now, you know, that just boggled my mind. Here you have HSUS, it's HSUS and its international arm, the Humane Society International. They bring 23 dogs from Korea. Now, let's think about this for a second. They're upset that the Koreans are eating dogs. This is HSUS, who's got Joe Maxwell as a vice president, and Joe Maxwell is a pig farmer. This is a guy who's raising and slaughtering pigs. So this is HSUS has got a vice president who's a pig farmer. HSUS has a CEO and president, Wayne Pissell, who's on the board of directors of the Global Animal Partnership, which is an organization that designs the five-step animal welfare ratings standard that's used by Whole Foods and some other suppliers. So basically, HSUS is promoting a happy exploitation and several happy exploitation labels through the participation of Wayne Pissell on the board of directors of the Global Animal Partnership. Humane Society International has its own happy label, the Humane Choice label. And this is HSUS is bringing 23 dogs. They're concerned that the Koreans are eating dogs when they've got a pig farmer as a vice president. You got Wayne Pissell promoting all of these happy labels. HSI, Humane Society International, has its own happy meat label. All of the HSUS and Humane Society International are encouraging the consumption of animal products, and a vice president is raising and slaughtering pigs, but they're upset about those Koreans. Now, you know, I'm sorry, Bob, that's nothing but ethnocentric, xenophobic nonsense. The Koreans are no worse than anybody else, including the guy who sits as a vice president of HSUS who's raising and slaughtering pigs. It simply makes no sense. The other thing about that that's absurd and is completely opportunistic is you're bringing, you're flying 23 dogs halfway around the world to bring to the United States so that they can be adopted out. Now, 1.2 million healthy dogs are killed here every year. So why are we flying dogs from Korea to adopt here? Because what's going to happen is there are 23 fewer dogs that are going to be adopted here, so that these animals can be adopted. Look, all of these animals, they deserve a good home. That's not the point. The point is this has got nothing to do with animals. This has got everything to do with the opportunism of HSUS in flying these dogs halfway around the world so they can have photo ops and they can engage in fundraising while Joe Maxwell's busy slaughtering pigs, while Wayne Pissell's busy on the board of the Global Animal Partnership, and while HSI, the Humane Society International, is making money by selling its Humane Choice label. It's obscene. It's opportunism. It has nothing to do with animals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you know.
And it also has Eric Swofford, who is the director of outreach, a cattle rancher, another management position. I mean, and all their agriculture councils around the country. They're all animal killers, really. I mean,
it's ridiculous. And then you know, the foie gras. You know, we had that big campaign, you know, in the early days of the 21st century, all of the activists were all excited about the foie gras ban in California, which they got in 2004, effective in 2012, only an 8-year lag time. And in 2004, 2003, when that was all going on, I said, you know what, if 8 years, if you get it, you know, if 2012 rolls around, it's not going to be enforced anyway. There will be the people who sell foie gras in their restaurants will end up giving it away to get around any sort of ban.
That's what they did. They charged you. They gave you a cracker for $20, and the foie gras came on the side
as
a garnish.
Exactly, and no one's going to enforce. You know, no one's going to say that that's a violation, and a court will probably hold that it's invalid anyway. And that's exactly what happened. Was that when the ban came into effect, the restaurants got around it by selling a glass of wine and a cracker for $20 and giving you, quote, free, end quote, foie gras. A court overturned it this past week, claiming that because the federal government regulates poultry products, the ban that wasn't a ban in California is preempted under federal law. And so they've overturned that. Now, I don't know whether, and now what happens is, HSUS and the Animal Legal Defense Fund are vowing to fight this. So now they're going to go to all the animal advocates and say, please, please, this is really horrible. We need your donations. I mean, how much money have these organizations made off of this absurd ban that isn't a ban? I mean, it is absolutely crazy. I mean, it's, you know, there's, and what's really upsetting about it is the message it sends out. These animal groups, and now Viva in the United Kingdom is doing this big campaign in over in Europe to try to get foie gras banned. Well, you know what? It's not that people stop eating foie gras and they start eating tofu or they have more broccoli. It's a question of they shift from one meat to another meat. And so why are animal people, you know, telling animal people who care about animals, why are they saying, look, there's a difference between foie gras and everything else? I mean, you go to the Viva website, you know, the British group Viva, you go to their website, and they're telling you, we have to ban foie gras, and then, you know, what you can do, donate, that's always in there, donate, but reduce your meat or go veggie or vegan. Now, what sort of message are you sending when you tell people not to eat foie gras, but when they're looking around for what they can do, you're telling them A, donate money, B, go veggie or vegan. In other words, continue to eat dairy products, continue to eat eggs, or reduce your meat consumption, but oppose foie gras. What message does that send? It sends the message that foie gras is worse than anything else. And the answer, the response to that is nonsense. Is foie gras horrible? Yes. So is steak. So is chicken, so is pork, so are eggs, so is milk, all of it is. This idea that some of it is better than others, you know, that's the message that gets sent out. But in any event,
with Wolfgang Puck, you know, did a video and he was saying how, okay, well, we're not going to do foie gras now. We'll make a pate out of cage-free chicken liver. So I approached HSUS, you know, Michael Greger at an event came to me and said, I hear you're talking badly about my organization. I said, well, look at you. You promote Wolfgang Puck and he's saying, you know, like, here, eat cage-free chicken liver pate instead of foie gras. And Michael Greger said to me, you don't think the cage-free chicken liver is better than foie gras? And Paul Shapiro said the same thing, but not to the chicken. You know what I mean? It's not
exactly. And see, the thing of it is that what really upsets me is these folks. I don't hear them. I hear them say those sorts of things in private, but I don't hear them say those sorts of things in public where they're saying they're always, you know, they're always saying, "Oh, we're not promoting this. We're not promoting." The answer is, of course, they're promoting the idea that. That pate made out of, quote, cage-free chickens or whatever they're made of is somehow better. But the message that gets sent out when HSUS sends it is that it's okay to eat the pate made from the cage-free chicken. That's the wrong message to be sending out. But all of these single-issue campaigns, they all do the same thing. I mean, that's what a single-issue campaign is. It's You identify some practice, whether it's foie gras or the, you know, the Taiji dolphins or whatever. You identify something which you then characterize as worse than everything else. So that's the thing we've got to go after. And the implication, and sometimes explicitly expressed, is that this is somehow worse than the other forms of exploitation that we're not going after. And so, you know, it really is. It's terribly troubling to me. And I think the foie gras campaign was a waste of time and money in 2003 and 2004. I think it's a waste of time and money now. It's ridiculous. The message that we should be sending out to people is if you care about animals, you don't eat them at all, you go vegan. If animals matter morally, then it makes no sense to you know, you can't justify consuming them. And that if animals matter morally, veganism is the least you can do, not what you do down the road after you've given up foie gras and then, you know, you've gone to, you know, grass-fed beef, and then, you know, you've weaned yourself off of that, and then you're on cage-free chicken. I mean, enough of this. Enough of this. Let's stop trying to come up with all sorts of excuses for how we can continue to do the wrong thing better. You can't do the wrong thing better. You got to stop doing the wrong thing. This is a matter of fundamental rights. We cannot justify continuing to exploit animals. So why don't we just confront that? I mean, if they matter, we stop eating them, and that's the end of it. Instead of this nonsense that, you know, we're going to look around and we're going to try desperately clinging on by our fingernails to the continued consumption of animals, and we're going to try to figure out some way to do it right. You can't figure out a right way to do something that violates fundamental rights. Just can't do it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that happened this week that surprised me somewhat, well, not terribly, but somewhat.
Whoops, you'll have to hold that thought until after the break. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione. Join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, March 20, 21, and 22. Marina Del Rey Marriott, Professor Francione conducting workshops. You won't want to miss it. Register now at worldvegansummit.com. Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and please join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can register now, WorldVeganSummit.com. At the Expo part, you'll be saying hi to the folks from Green Light Meals, GreenLiteMeals.com. No excuse, you can have great vegan meals delivered to your door wherever you are in the USA. Just go to GreenLiteMeals.com. And also Nature's Flavors, NaturesFlavors.com. Check out the website. You'll see how much flavor you can add to your vegan cooking. Nature's Flavors giving us Birdie and Bill's natural sodas. We'll be drinking Select Coffee, organic coffee and tea at the event, S-E-E-L-E-C-T, Select Coffee and Tea. And check out the banner ads at GoVeganRadio.com, SoCalCSA.com. Those are the folks growing our veganic produce that we'll be eating there. If you're in the L.A. area, lucky you. You can have veganic produce delivered to your home from, click on that website, SoCalCSA.com. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione, and were you about to talk about the obscenity that was so upsetting to me this week, or the champagne toast prop too, or was
actually I wasn't. I was going, but you know what I was going to talk about, I will get out quickly, and then we can talk about the champagne toast because that's pretty outrageous too.
Yeah, very obscene.
And
yeah,
I was very very upset this week to see that the Vegan Society in the UK, the society that Donald Watson started in 1944 because he was upset that people who call themselves vegetarians weren't eating vegetables and fruits, they were eating eggs and dairy. So he came up with the Vegan Society. And the Vegan Society in the past few years since Donald Watson died in the mid-90s or so, the Vegan Society has really just gone downhill and has really abandoned veganism as a moral baseline. But I saw this past week they had announced that they were part of a campaign with some science organization in the UK. And I looked at the science organization, and I wrote to them, and I asked them what their position was on vivisection. And they said basically when they get questions, they refer people to Understanding Animal Research, which is one of the most virulently pro-vivisection PR groups on the planet. It evolved, if such a word is appropriate in this context. It evolved from the Research Defense Society, which was started by Colin Blakemore, who has been a notorious defender of vivisection for many years now. And for the Vegan Society to be partnering with an organization that is basically promoting vivisection PR is really upsetting to me. They claim that they're doing this because they want to be evidence-based and they want their members to get hard facts about veganism. Well, you know what? You can get hard facts about veganism without the Vegan Society partnering with a pro-vivisection PR group. I think it's really sad. But again, this is what's happening. All of these groups are in a desperate a race to see who can sell out the animals faster in order to increase the size of the donor base by being an organization that doesn't really require anybody to change anything or to change their thinking about anything. Just be in your comfort zone, stay in your comfort zone. The only thing is make sure you donate to us. It's really upsetting. Now we can go on and talk about the champagne.
But somebody needs to talk to the Vegan Society about vivisection being science-based anyway. Like, that's kind
but
of...
In a sense, I agree. Vivisection is ridiculous. It's voodoo science. But that's not the point. Point is, you know, whether it is or whether it's not, it's wrong.
Right.
And that's really what the issue is like, you know, why is the Vegan Society partnering with an organization? I mean, you know, they don't need to do that. They, you know, people can get all sorts of information about veganism, fact-based information about veganism. You know, they can get it. It's easy to get. It's now research has become much more easy as a result of the Internet. The Vegan Society should not be partnering with an organization that is promoting vivisection, and that is, you know, that is promoting vivisection PR of the most virulent, irresponsible sort. And so, you know, I just think it's horrible. But, you know, look, it's all part of the same thing. That's why, you know, we're seeing, you know, that animal advocates are having these champagne, and I bet you the champagne isn't vegan, most of it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of champagne is not vegan. But, you know, they're having these celebrations in California over Proposition 2. That's really horrible. It's irresponsible. It's a sellout of the animals.
It's obscene.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we're out of time. So join us at the summit, worldvegansummit.com. Register now. We'll talk to you again next week, Professor Francione. Thanks for listening.